you can wave your hands all around and see what happens.
My name is Marnin. You've just been listening to my theremin, but now you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. Before we get into the episode, I just want to thank everybody for listening. We've got a great episode for you. We're going to be talking about fairy tales. But right now, I just want to make sure that I thank the patrons of Nutty Bites that are making Nutty Bites possible, that are helping pay for server costs and helping me continue this show. Thank you so much. Without you, it'd be a struggle. Doing Dog Days has made it. It gives me a little bit more energy, more of a burst of creativity, and I get to break the rules and everything. And I wasn't exactly planning to do a full episode this month. I was going to use one of the panels or whatever because I was recording an episode a day. But then I ended up getting this opportunity to have this chat with Katie Brisky. So please enjoy that. So thank you so much to all the patrons. You have helped me tremendously, and just knowing that you are backing me and that you are here supporting me is making things so much easier for me to do, and it makes me want to turn on this microphone more and more. So thank you so much, all of you. But specifically, I want to thank Shane. Thank you so much. Aaron, thank you, and thank you so much. David, thank you. Patrick, thank you. Jen, thank you so much. I'm thinking about you always. All of you, actually. Harold, thank you. Ian, thank you. Aurora Lee, thank you so much. Beth, thank you. Kinsey, thank you. Susanna, thank you. Frank, thank you so much. And thank you for that Italian ice last week. That was just an extra goodie. Melissa, thank you. Lynette, thank you. And Susan, thank you so much. Thank you for all that you do. Every single one of you is special to me, and I could probably talk for a half hour about each of you and how awesome you are, because each of these patrons, you know, I know through this wonderful thing called the internet, and you have all supported me, not just financially, but in other ways. And having this financial support, it's more than just money. It makes me feel touched, and it makes me feel happy and like I'm doing something that people care about, and it makes me want to get back in the seat. As I mentioned in one of the Dog Days episodes, Nutty Bites has become a finalist for the Parsecs. And I know of at least one listener, that's Aaron. That's one of the patrons. He's also the guy that does the quality assurance. He generally listens to episodes that I'm not sure if I've gotten all the swearing out from, and he'll take a listen to it and let me know what I missed, because I almost always miss something. And so he's been very helpful for that. So he's going to see if he can go to the award ceremony, and if by some bizarre happening Nutty Bites wins, he's going to accept for me. If there are other Mixed Nutcases, if there are other listeners that are going to be at Dragon Con, let me know, and we'll see if we can coordinate. It would be awesome to have more of you there, and if more of you want to help accept the award, that'd be great, you know. But I don't see Nutty Bites winning. We're up against some serious competition, including Slice of Sci-Fi, which is, you know, one of the early podcasts that I started listening to. So that's just really weird. But there's a lot of other great podcasts and that have become finalists. And it's really neat because none of my friends are competing with each other, except for Jared, who's competing with himself. But Jared Axelrod is a finalist for Voice of Free Planet X. Two of his episodes are up. Paul Cooley, the guy everybody thinks that they are. He's up for The Black, which is awesome. Chris Morse, which you may remember came as Professor Brain Fever onto Nutty Bites a couple years ago. He's been nominated and made a finalist. And Astronomy Cast with Pamela Gay has been made a finalist. And I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. So if I am, I'm really sorry. But all of you are great, and I'm so happy. So now listen to this awesome show I recorded tonight. Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got a special nutty debate for you today. Today, I have Katie Brisky, author of 6 Stories Told at Night, as well as many other things, but that's what we're focusing on today, to join me today to talk about fairy tales. But first, Katie, why don't you introduce yourself, let everybody know who you are, and tell us a little bit about 6 Stories.
Sure. Hi, I'm Katie Brisky. I'm a Canadian author and podcaster. Also a beer expert by day. That is my actual job title. So I tend to write a lot of fairy tale based fiction, six stories amongst them. So it is my one woman audio drama, which was funded by the Ontario Arts Council, which is pretty cool. They're happy when I mention that. So funded by the OAC. So I've taken five traditional Canadian fairy tales and interwoven them within a larger framing narrative. As we've got Sam and her best friend Joelle has stumbled into the other world, fairy, and the only way to get her back is to tell the fairies a story they've never heard before. Hence, my Canadian folktales coming in.
So what are the folktales that you tackle?
So I've got Bonhomme Sauteur, I've got Rose la Tulipe, Le Chien d'Or, the Golden Dog, the Wendigo, and La Corriveau.
So most of them are French, yes?
Almost all of them, yeah.
Awesome.
I was talking with Chris Lester recently, and the only one that's kind of sort of not entirely French is the Wendigo.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some Native Canadian influence. But yeah, mostly I'm focusing on French Canadian fairy tales.
Is there a particular reason that you went that way? Does that have something to do with the grant, or those are the fairy tales that you happen to be drawn to?
I'm sure it helped the grant. I'm sure it didn't hurt. But no, it was the fairy tales that I thought were really cool.
Cool.
And also I find French Canada has a very robust oral tradition. Remember, Quebec is kind of like this lovely French oasis surrounded by lots of English-speaking provinces. So they've really done a lot to preserve and conserve their oral tradition and their folktales. So partly it was a lot easier to find sources. I thought they were super cool. And realistically, I'm sure it didn't hurt.
So for people who aren't that familiar with Canada, the French language and culture, they really work to preserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where these little jokes are coming from.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's super cool. I wish my French was better. I used to be almost fluent. But if you don't use it, you forget it so quickly.
This is true. Tech, the regular co-host, he's actually French first language.
Cool.
Didn't learn English till the third grade, but his English is his better language. And he has mm-hmm. found through different stages of his career, depending on how many French people he works with, his French gets much, much better.
Yeah, if I can go like and have a proper conversation, after a while, it starts coming back. But like I had people at the museum recently who told me, we are French. It's like, okay. So I had just enough to kind of tell them who I was and what I was doing. And then it's like, oh, you're really good. It's like, nope, that was it.
That's all I got.
that's all I have today. I'm really sorry. It should be better than it is.
So as somebody that's been, I lived in the East Coast for quite a while. Are any of the stories Acadian, or are they all like Quebec French?
All pretty Quebec French.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I thought they were cool. That's literally, I amassed a whole big bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I picked the ones that I thought were the coolest.
That's fantastic. And I've been so excited about you being able to get this grant, because
Thank
you're
you.
Able to write and do podcasting and pay people and do all these wonderful things. And it's one of the many reasons that I love Canada, because it really supports the arts. And if you go back and listen to my Robert J. Sawyer interview, that's pretty much all we talked about.
We're really lucky up here. Like, we really, really are.
Yeah.
And it's been so amazing to actually be able to pay people. And also very much that you get what you pay for. Like, have you heard that theme song that Alex White wrote
he's
for
fantastic.
Me? It's
I love
amazing.
Alex.
I would never be able to afford
mm-hmm.
Alex White
yeah.
without the government helping me.
And it's so much fun that we can, you know, pay back these people that we know and there's so many people in the podcasting world. They're very creative and they don't get mm-hmm. rewarded for their creativity and their talents. And you can do that.
Absolutely. Even Blythe, my actress, she's my one woman and my one
yes,
woman.
She's
show.
Very so good.
She's very good. And we've been working together for like 5 years now. And for 5 years, she's been paid in love. And I do love her a lot. So I've got lots of love to offer, but love doesn't buy groceries.
This is true. This is very true. So it's a great way to say thank you and pay back. And
exactly.
The neat thing about this, unlike some of the other paid stuff, is it's not coming from a crowdfunding thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not asking your fans for the money. And it's not coming from, well, I'm taking this part of my book sales, or I'm taking this part of this other thing that I got, or, you know, whatever. It's paid for, it's done, and
it's
you got
to me, and I don't have to worry. I mean, obviously I really want the story to do well.
Yeah.
But I'm going to but I also cashed my check already. So it is nice to get the money up front because you don't have to worry about it quite the same way. Mm-hmm. And for me too, I really like the idea of podcasting being such an accessible medium. And this was a big part of the grant application, saying, look, anyone with an internet connection can hear this. Yep. I don't want to put it behind a paywall. I want it to be out there because I want people to hear these stories.
Exactly.
And learn about this Canadian heritage.
And because of that, you are going to be able to enrich the culture of Canada, which is what the whole point of the arts grants are for.
Exactly. So
I love
it. Worked out really, really well.
And hopefully if it does really well, you can get more grants, because in your next grant proposal, you can say, well, here are my numbers.
Exactly. So yeah, I really want it to do well. But it is nice being able to say, yep, Alex, Starla, Ellen, Blythe, here's your stuff.
Go.
Here's your checks. You guys are amazing. You've been fairly compensated.
That's awesome. So today we're going to be talking about fairy tales, and we're going to talk about fairy tales then and now. Fairy tales that we grew up loving, fairy tales that we love now, because what we liked as kids can often be very different than what we like as adults.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just start it up. Why don't you tell me one of your favorite fairy tales from when you were a kid? We'll start with the kids and then we'll move on to adults.
So if we're just looking at stories, I really liked Beauty and the Beast a lot.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it was. And I liked both, obviously, the written version, or a written version, because every fairy tale, many different retellings. But I was also a fan of the Disney version, which I think is also a valid fairy tale retelling. Every fairy tale adaptation is a product of its time.
Agreed.
But God, I remember being like 10 and super feverish. And apparently my thing when I'm feverish is I watch Disney movies and just get too emotional. So at the end, when like the Beast is dying and he can't hear Belle telling him that he loves her, sitting there, 10, tears stream, my mom's like, everything okay? No. And also a lot of the Beauty and the Beast variants, like East of the Sun and West of the Moon, is basically Norwegian Beauty and the Beast with a polar bear.
That
and
works.
Essentially. And then the small toothed dog is essentially English East of the Sun with a dog instead of a bear. So I sense a theme in the fairy tales that I liked.
I always liked Beauty and the Beast. It was definitely one of these. I love the stories where it was about seeing past the facade and looking past beauty. Because I grew up thinking I was a very ugly child, and that's the worst thing that you could be, which is a horrible stance, but it's definitely one of those things that people in North America, women in North America will grow up with. So to me, that was always very cool. You know, the ugly duckling, the Beauty and the Beast type deals. And I always identified with the Beast, not with
me
beauty.
Me too. I think for me, it was more like the anxiety as a kid for me. So it's more like this internal thing that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So having someone see past that, I think that's why I gravitated towards it.
Yep.
Interesting.
I do know that, there's definite differences. And I know some people, they have a hard time. They're like, oh, Disney ruins everything. And I don't think that's the case. I think one of the positives that Disney had for Beauty and the Beast is that we actually see that she doesn't have to just see through his facade. He's a monster in reality, you know, like he has got a horrible temper, and he doesn't know how to express himself or communicate, and he just lashes out, and he actually has to change to get that love, and she warms his heart and changes him.
And the idea kind of the external mirroring what's happening on the inside, of course, is so common in fairy tales.
Well, and how often when you're upset, do you just lash out?
Yeah, you become a beast.
Exactly.
To people around you.
I'm reminded of those Snickers ads.
Yeah.
You know, you're not yourself when you're hungry.
No, I'm definitely not.
I wish I knew this when I was younger, but I learned after growing up that my baby sister, if she's hungry, we're just going to get into a fight. And she's just going to be angry all the time. And that if she's hungry, just feed her. And then if she starts fighting with you, just feed her. She'll be fine. That's her husband's trick to their happy marriage. She gets upset. He feeds her.
I have friends like that. I should just keep granola bars in my bag. And when they start getting the look, I just chuck food at them.
There you go. That's a great visual.
Just take a granola bar.
So one of the first fairy tales that I thought of when I thought of this topic was growing up, I had these collection of illustrated fairy tales. And in there was the 12 Dancing Princesses. And I can tell you that when I thought of it, I couldn't remember the solution to the fairy tale. But I remembered all the other details. I remembered it was 12 princesses. I remembered they were all sisters. I remembered they sneak out at night. I remembered the gold leaves. I remember the guy following them.
And their shoes being all worn out.
Yeah, which they had like the worst shoes. If one night of dancing, they could wear through all their shoes.
It was really intense dancing. It was just so intense.
So I had to go. I have the book downstairs and I looked it up and I saw the resolution. I was like, oh, okay, so he spied on them and he got to marry without their consent because they all had boyfriends that met them every single night.
Yeah.
And he got and the soldier who did all this, he got the kingdom. Yay. Maybe that's why I didn't remember that. But I'm pretty sure that
just rewrite your own.
Yeah. The reason I remembered this, and love this, and I remember asking, like, it was time for, you know, getting read a story, and it was always 12 dancing princesses, 12 dancing princesses. Stuck with me for the same reason the old woman in the shoe always stuck with me. And, you know, old woman in the shoe, she had too many children. She didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I come from a very large family. I am the 7th of 9.
Oh, wow.
So to me, I'm pretty sure the reason that that stuck with me is because it was like, oh, it's a story about my family.
Yeah, you can recognize yourself in it.
And so that's why they stayed with me. But they were so much fun.
Plus, yeah, and it's go fun ahead. Too to bring up like the specific books that you read them in too. Because when we first talked about this topic, even before I started thinking about specific fairy tales, I remembered this series of fairy tale collections that I read as a kid. It was the Ruth Manning Sanders books.
That's a good one. Yep.
Yeah, so they're from like I think the 50s or 60s, but it's like a book of magic animals, a book of changelings and charms, a book of wizards. So she had like probably 20 of them with these wonderful like 1950s illustrations. And like it's funny when you look back to your childhood just to see like what the building blocks of your own literary tradition are, because that was definitely one of mine. And also like the red fairy book and the olive fairy book and the green fairy book, like all the Andrew Lang books as well.
My the other book that I have from my childhood still is a collected work of poems. And in that, I have like a lock of hair taped in there. And I don't know why.
Do you know whose?
It's mine.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know why. If I ever come back and haunt people, that's the book you have to salt and burn. But But I have no idea. But it's one of those things. It's that artifact that you keep with you. And I pulled it out not long ago because I had made a reference about, you know, it's like I ate the plums. Oh, what's that poem?
Oh, it's the William Carlos Williams poem.
Yes.
I ate the plums that were in the icebox and that you were saving. I don't know the entire poem, but I was saving them for breakfast. And they were so cold and so sweet.
And I made a reference to that because we had plums and all this other stuff. And I made this whole reference and my husband's just, what? I don't understand. What are you talking about? I'm like, look, what is this book? So it was, those books, they're like cornerstones, you know?
They are. Yeah. I think when we're kids, like we definitely get this foundation of books and stories that we're exposed to. And I think they can show up in funny ways later on in life, especially if you are a creative type.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you get steeped in a certain tradition for sure.
It's one of the reasons why I have a lot of nieces and nephews. Obviously, I come from a large family. My husband comes from a small family. He has one sister. And so the rule is there are only two things that we give as presents, books, or I bake them cakes or cupcakes. But That's it.
Solid. I like it.
But so we're always giving out books because of that, you know, that these are the books that are going to shape you. So it was really exciting. Like, oh, I'm going to give you Corduroy and I'm going to give you Rainbow Fish and all of this. And this year, I'm trying to remember what Ramona Quimby.
And isn't it so great? Because we have these like such visceral connections with these stories. And then when we pass them on to someone else, we find someone that liked them too. It's like this really intense bonding moment all of a sudden.
It was really neat. My husband, he's like, we're giving it to my niece. And he says, you're just old enough to read these. And I've been, ever since we started giving you books, this is the set of books I wanted to give you. And it was just, it was so great. And she's so cute because she's in immersion. So she specifically teaches herself to read English so that she can read the books that we've given her.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, she can read English, but, you know, they do a certain amount of years in French and then they do a certain amount of years in English. And right now her French is stronger in reading than her English. And it's just, it's really cute.
Yeah, and it's again, it's a really nice connection because it's what stories do, right?
Yep.
They connect us. And it's even more, I think, like looking at oral traditions because they change so much, right? Every storyteller is going to put their own stamp on it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, if you've ever read a story to a child, I mean, as you're reading it, you're going to find something that you can connect to the child and you would emphasize that. So imagine you're doing it orally and remembering it from your childhood and then you change it for the next person that you read it for and so on and so forth.
Exactly. And then they pass it down and it ends up almost being like broken telephone.
Absolutely.
In a funny way. Which can be frustrating if you're researching them, but also it's just really cool because that's what keeps stories alive. Which I really like the image.
That's my favorite.
Every story just kind of morphing a little bit as it moves down the line.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing is when people say, well, I like the real Little Mermaid. I'm like, so what's the real Little Mermaid? Because stories are allowed to evolve.
Yeah. I mean, the Little Mermaid is an interesting one because like it was written by Hans Christian Andersen.
Yes.
So you can point to it and say, yep, that's the first time. It's not necessarily the most valid representation. It is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It is one that he wrote. I think as a fairy tale, it is allowed to have other permutations. But if you look at something like Little Red Riding Hood, it goes back way too far to look at the original Little Red Riding Hood. You can have older versions, but I think the original has been lost to the mists of time.
Absolutely. So what are some others that you truly valued when you were younger?
There was one, it's going to sound really random, but there was one actually Chinese fairy tale that I loved. It was called Mrs. Number 3, and it's about this roadside tavern, and this guy stops in, and it's got like a yard beside it with a huge brace of donkeys that are really, really good-looking donkeys. So the proprietress of this tavern, Mrs. Number 3, makes magic buckwheat pancakes, and she feeds them to the hotel guests.
Yes.
And they turn into donkeys, yeah.
I'm remembering this.
The guy stays up overnight and he watches her and she has this model plow and ox and little man and she spreads the seeds in the dining room and the models come to life and they grow the barley plants and she crushes them all up and makes them into pancakes and serves them the next morning. And he doesn't eat his. He swaps it out with a non-magic one and then he tricks her into eating it. So she becomes a donkey and has lots of misfortune before she's eventually turned back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
I liked that one. I liked transformations, which I think is why I was also drawn to Beauty and the Beast. Like if you're looking at Mrs. Number 3 or things like the 12 Wild Ducks or the Seven Swans or any of those very similar stories where you've got the many brothers being turned into birds of some kind.
Yes.
Yeah. Not a fairy tale, but I liked the Metamorphoses for the same reason. Like if you're looking at Greek mythology.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much in there.
Yeah.
As you were telling that story, I was thinking, it reminded me of another thing that I loved reading when I was a kid, and it was the Judge Uka tales.
I don't think I read those.
And it's Japanese, folklore, I think.
Cool.
And it was about this judge and people would come and they would, present him with their problems, and then he would, you know, put judgment over them. And
okay, kind of like Solomon.
Yeah, kind of. And so one of the ones that I can think of was there was a poor man living above a restaurant, and his friend said, "How can you live like this? You know, all you have to eat is rice. You can't even enjoy yourself, and you just live in this tiny shack." And he says, "Oh, but it's wonderful because I live above a restaurant. So I just smell, I close my eyes and I smell the food, and then my rice tastes like whatever they're cooking. And it's delicious." And the owner of the restaurant heard that. And so he wants to start charging for the scents and get some money back from his tenant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically Judge Uka has this great way of solving it and making everybody understand, you know, how crazy that is. But in every way, it's always presented in such a way that he's able to not just determine what the best judgment is, but to make both parties understand and agree.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
They were a lot of fun. I can't find those books. I don't even remember who made them. I'm pretty sure my baby sister has the book somewhere. I think she was the last to have it. But yeah, that was one of them. Another one that I really loved, and I think it might have to do with the illustrations, was The Snow Queen.
Oh, I like that one.
And I can't remember too much. I just know that there was this boy and he was basically enslaved by the Snow Queen, and his best friend ends up helping him. And the illustrations are absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I like the fairy tales too, with like that best friend or the sibling dynamic. So much more interesting to me than like the romantic relationships.
Absolutely. Especially as a kid. I didn't care about the romantic relationships.
Like, I don't have time for this. This is nonsense. Sisters like going to the ends of the earth to save each other. That I'm on board with.
Well, to me, you know, it was the reward at the end of a fairy tale for the romantic ones where it was always marriage. And when I was a kid, I was like, ugh, I don't want that. I didn't want that till I was 30. I mean, I never wanted marriage. So to me, that was a punishment. Yeah. I'm a weird one.
I felt the same. The Snow Queen is interesting, though. We've been trying to propose like a pantomime at Black Creek using the Snow Queen as our basis. And going back to it's Hans Christian Andersen again.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. We had a lot of those books.
He had a lot of really touching, like the Ugly Duckling was his as well. Like,
well, and a lot of them were scary too.
And like heart-stringing.
Yeah.
Like they're really good. And they're really good partly because they're so heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
But yeah, he has a very definitive style.
Well, you know, for anyone who hasn't read Hans Christian Andersen, I mean, and a great example of this, I'm going to go back to The Little Mermaid, is, she basically loses everything.
Mm-hmm.
She loses everything because she loves
like
someone who doesn't love her.
Walking, and then she dies, but she's just a mermaid, so she's not going to go to heaven.
Yep.
She'll just become foam, maybe one day.
Yep.
She might maybe be able to go to heaven. But probably not. Is the red shoes his too?
That might be.
I feel like it is. It would not surprise me at all.
Let's see. I'm Googling. This is great audio. Hans Christian Andersen. Of course it is.
Called it. again, it kind of has his fingerprints on it, though.
That's what, like, you know, I was thinking the same thing.
Like, it's got his feel to it. Which is why I think he's a really interesting example, just because in terms of fairy tales, he's so recent.
Yeah.
Relatively.
Yeah.
Also very Victorian, too. Like, he's actually writing for an audience that would include children, possibly. If you look at some of the really, really old ones, they're not necessarily for kids all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
An older version of Little Red Riding Hood is the story of Grandmother. That's got a lot of sex and bathroom humor in it. A lot of cannibalism.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like, if you think about, I mean, you know, there's even the songs that we sing to children, you know, Rockabye Baby.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Ring Around the Rosie.
Yeah.
Actually.
These are horrible, horrible things. And, you know, we say these songs and these stories to kids now as a way to comfort them and embolster them, but they weren't used in the same way. In the past, they really were meant to scare and to warn and instill fear in children so that they would behave the way that they wanted them to?
Or to like distance yourself from something terrible. I'm thinking about Ring Around the Rosie.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Being all about plague, death. So much less threatening if it's an amusing rhyme and game.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So now we're adults. And we like different fairy tales. Well, sort of. We are larger kids.
I pretend to be an adult.
Well, we're adults. We're not grown-ups. There's a difference. I was dubbed last week with swimming with my nephew that I am still a kid. And that's why I'm so much fun. He's three. So he would be the expert. So now that we are larger children.
Yes.
What are some of the fairy tales that are nearest and dearest to us now?
So we were talking just before the show opened about whether adaptations can be a thing. And we both agreed that yes, they can be.
Yes, they can. It's just a new way of telling the story.
Exactly. And I've been really enjoying a lot of the modern, very dark retellings of fairy tales, like getting back to those very primal, dark meanings and imagery behind a lot of the stories that we've taken for granted since we were kids. And something I absolutely love is Angela Carter's collection of fairy tale retellings, The Bloody Chamber.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's got Bluebeard in there, obviously, and she does a really wonderful retelling of Bluebeard in that book. And I swear she's got another version in which the wife decides, I'm not going to look behind the door. I know exactly what's in there, but I like my life in this castle. And I know if I just don't say anything, I'm going to keep it. And it's so horrifying. And it makes you just view it in a completely different way. And it makes it fresh again for the first time. And that's what I love with a lot of the modern retellings. So also in that book, Angela Carter's got a couple different versions of Little Red Riding Hood. She's got two, I think, of Beauty and the Beast. She's got one of the Snow Queen.
Oh, nice.
Actually. Yeah. The Earl King as well. And she's such a beautiful, lyrical writer. I want to be her when I grow up. For real. At least I want to write like her when I grow up, for real.
You know, I'm just remembering to our little discussion about grown-ups, and I have to remember again just how young you are. Because you're so successful.
I'm older than I used to be when I started this podcast.
This is true. But we all are, aren't we?
Well, unless you guys have discovered a secret, I haven't yet.
Shh, don't tell anyone. Podcasting keeps you young. I have watched people. It seems like they're reversing an age through podcasting.
Oh, dear.
Because
that's kind of cool. I'm finding their passion.
I'm getting
a story now about like recording your voice at a certain age.
Oh, write it.
Oh, I probably will.
I've long since had this profound experience, you know, having lost some podcasters, the fact that their voice will always be there and you can go back and listen to their stories and you can listen to their voice telling you those stories.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's one of the reasons why I have this project that I'm working on to get Netty Bites put onto archive.org.
Nice.
So that it will be there forever.
Nice.
That's retelling and getting a new angle is one of the things that I absolutely love. And years ago, I read this book by a not that well-known author at the time, but I'm pretty sure most people know who he is now, Gregory Maguire, who is famous because of Wicked.
Uh-huh.
But I read The Ugly Stepsister, and I loved it. And it's horrible, but it's wonderful in all of those ways. You know, it shows you. What he does is he goes and he finds the supposed villains of the tale and tells the story from their perspective. And you can see how, Cinderella, you're not that nice a person.
No.
Stepmom may not have been so nice to you, but wow. And and she was punished in that tale. Mm-hmm. She was punished with marriage because she was stuck being married.
She got hers. She marrying was this.
Yep.
Oaf who's willing to marry anyone whose foot fits the shoe.
And she got syphilis, I think, too, or some sort of thing. I don't remember exactly, but she ended up getting an STD from this guy, and she was stuck marrying this guy that she spent one night with.
I feel oddly satisfied by this.
It was very satisfying, actually. It was pretty wild.
Tragedy, in some ways. Mm-hmm. It's like, your flaw has perfectly dictated your downfall. Yes. And your comeuppance. Yes. Look at this. Hmm.
And that was the beginning of my foray into fairy tales retold and having a new twist on them. And I've just loved them ever since.
Have you read, Tor did a whole series of fairy tale retellings, like novella length, novella to short novel length. I think Terry Windling was the main force behind it. But they've got a whole ton of them. So like I read Tanith Lee's retelling of Snow White, which I would say bleak, but bleak isn't a strong enough word for that retelling. It was very grim, but in a really cool way, because she really expanded. It's actually told from the stepmother's point of view. So you start with her as a young girl and then follow her, and you see her progression to what she became, the evil stepmother we know so well. And charting that and charting Snow White's also, her downward spiral. Again, bleak is a good word, but it's not strong enough.
That sounds interesting. I will have to check those out because I'm, like I said, I love hearing them bend fairy tales into a different thing, you know, just turning it on its axis.
And I love seeing fairy tales juxtaposed as well with like a modern narrative. And another book in that series was Stephen Brust did The Sun and the Moon and the Stars, which is a Hungarian fairy tale. Mm-hmm. So the whole novella was flipping back and forth between a retelling of this Hungarian fairy tale about a guy and his brothers who's off to rescue the sun, the moon, and the stars, juxtaposed with an artist studio. And the painters, you know, trying to get their act together to do a show and trying to raise money. And it was very La Boheme. It was lovely. Part of me was like, oh, yes, it's the dream. Yes. But seeing them side by side was super cool because you have this thing where each is illuminating the other, which I really like playing with in my fiction as well.
Oh, that's great. So there's a couple of fairy tales that I'm going to say are modern fairy tales that are very important to me. And yes, I started with them when I was a kid, but they are just as important to me now as an adult. And I'm going to put them together because they're in the same genre. They're both movies. Now, one of them was a book, but that doesn't matter. The Princess Bride and Labyrinth. And Labyrinth specifically, because that was written as a modern fairy tale.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's a good one. And it's much more it's really positive. But I think that The Princess Bride, some of those actors just really make it great.
Yeah, and it's, again, the thing where it was such a cornerstone of your childhood.
Yeah.
And then even as an adult. And I think, too, with stories like The Princess Bride and Labyrinth, when you go back to it as an adult, you maybe notice things you didn't see as a kid. Like, did you find that?
Oh, absolutely.
Some of the jokes that went at 10, you're suddenly like... Oh,
that's what they meant. Okay. Yeah. There was definitely some of that. There was definitely, you know, certain things that I didn't quite get. You know, when I was young and watching Labyrinth, I identified with Sarah because she was supposed to be my age, although it was really funny because I thought she was like older than me. But as it turns out, she was probably about the same age because Jennifer Connelly was only 14. She does not look 14, but she was only 14 when they filmed that. But Labyrinth to me is one of the great types of tales because it's about a young person, and in this case, a young girl, who is taking care of herself. I mean, her friends are her support, but she's there for herself, and it's her that she has to find the power within herself, and she has... You have no power over me. And she has to find that power and rely on that power, and her friends help her by giving her support, but they can't do it for her. She has to do it for herself. And it's not about romance. As a matter of fact, like the Goblin King's in love with her, but she's not interested in that. And she doesn't want that.
And if you're about the same age, so like a young adolescent, hearing that, it must have been very empowering.
Oh, absolutely. I wanted to be Sarah.
I think it's cool. I think sometimes stories find us at the right moment.
Absolutely.
Like the right moment in our lives, either developmentally or just circumstantially, is what we're going through. That's cool.
Are there any other stories like that you can think of that, you know, like most people wouldn't consider a fairy tale, but to you, you think it's an important story?
I shall ponder this. Well, I guess going back to my childhood more than an adult, Call of the Wild. in a lot of ways, because I don't think you'd consider it like a typical fairy tale.
No.
But in some ways, like, it is very much a quest story. Our quester is a dog, but that's fine. And it actually, if you look at the structure of a fairy tale, it has a lot of the same tropes, right? Like, you have helper characters. Mm-hmm. You're leaving your home. There's the call to adventure, right? And he does cross that threshold. Usually in a lot of these fairy tales as well, there's this kind of descent into the underworld and death and rebirth and apotheosis. And if you look at Buck returning to the wild as kind of that descent to the underworld, I think it actually, now that I'm saying this out loud, mimics the fairy tale pattern quite well, actually.
Oh, I think it does. But it's also one of those very modern fairy tales, you know, because...
20th century, I think.
20th or 18th? I don't remember exactly.
19th century?
We'll find out.
also, like... I loved, as a kid, and not just for fairy tales, but I loved reading things and recognizing, again, things that applied to my life. So, like, Canada. Reading things about the Yukon, because so much of the stuff we get is about the states.
Yes.
And even if it wasn't a fairy tale, like, even just reading, like, middle grade chapter books and having them reference, like, I don't know, loonies instead of dollar bills. Shocking, I know. I remember there was one, actually. It was about a girl, like, this Chinese-Canadian girl, who stumbled across this dragon egg. So she hatches it and the dragon becomes her friend. It's one of those stories. Mm-hmm. But she lived in Toronto.
Oh, neat.
So they mentioned streets and places that I knew. And as a kid, that was the coolest thing ever. And like the schools worked the right way. Like it was grade 4, not fourth grade. So, so looking at the story, it was, what was it called? I need to Google this woman's name. I remember the author's name. It's Allison Baird. Allison Baird Dragon, the Dragon's Egg. That's what it was called.
That sounds great. I have to read that.
That's another fairy tale that I would say most people wouldn't consider a fairy tale, but it was important to me. And that's why also I wanted to do the six stories. It's like, look, here's our stories.
Yeah.
So we're sharing them too now, but also we can look at them and say, yeah, this is where we've come from.
So Jack London... 1890s, so almost 20th century, but very close.
I figured it was in there somewhere.
I actually read Call of the Wild as an adult, and you know, it was one of those things, like, I'd heard of it, and when I was in my 20s, I had this big push. I said, you know what, I'm going to, every other book that I read, I'm going to read a modern book, and then I'm going to read a classic, and I'm going to read a modern and then a classic, and because I really wanted to get in on these classics that I hadn't gotten to. And Jack London, he's not exactly like what I like, but there was something about reading that you get into the, like, he's able to get you into this headspace where you are the dog and you're thinking like a dog. You know, it really changes the way that you're viewing the world. So it was very profound. So it was a really interesting experiment for me. And that was definitely one of the more positive classics that I went through. And I totally understood all of your things there. And when you were talking about, you know, reading something and having it relate to things that you grew up with, and how important it is as a Canadian to read Canadian tales, which
and to
is
to see yourself in your fiction. Yeah.
There is an author, Alice Hoffman. This is not fairy tales, but Alice Hoffman is an author. Many people know of the movie Practical Magic, which has nothing to do with the book whatsoever. And I highly recommend you read the book because it's completely different.
Yeah.
It's like they have the same names and that's about it.
It's one of those different adaptations. All right.
But Alice Hoffman, almost all of her stories that I've read take place on Long Island in New York.
Cool.
And she references places. And you know the streets she's on, you know the attitudes, you know the people. So having that feel always made things a little cooler. So I can completely, having not grown up in Canada, I can completely understand the desire to have things that relate to you, you know, to have kids using toonies and bagged milk and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, things like that.
Girl guides, not Girl Scouts. And
exactly. Homo milk.
Yes.
Because we're that cool. It's not what you think. I know you know what it is.
Yes.
For the rest of your audience, it's not what you think.
We'll just let them Google it. There you go.
There you go.
We won't tell them what it is. We'll just let them Google it.
Bags of homo milk. We're such a cool country.
One of the things was, what's the name of the movie series? Ginger Snaps. When I first saw that, I thought that was totally cool because it's a horror film, but their money is all different colors and they have bag milk and it's totally obviously Canadian, but they never actually say they're in Canada or where they are.
And I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I kind of like how it doesn't always have to be explicitly stated.
Because they don't do that in American films.
No, it's just taken. Yep, this is where we are. That's fine. I've actually, it's been funny because I've done fairly well focusing on Canadian content fiction. And I wonder if some of it is just because it's just different enough to seem really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it's familiar enough that you don't get too sidetracked by it.
Yeah, absolutely. So now I just want to talk a little bit about some interesting adaptations.
Sure.
And so I'm going to start with one of my favorite adaptations, and this is a movie, of Red Riding Hood, is the movie Freeway.
Oh.
As I describe it, it is Red Riding Hood on crack. It stars Reese Witherspoon, before anybody knew who she was, as Red, and the wolf is Kiefer Sutherland.
Lovely. Cool.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, she would be such a good Red Riding Hood, too.
She is basically this young girl growing up in the ghetto on foster care and all of this other stuff. And she'd been with her mom, and her mom gets arrested again, and they want to put her back in foster care. So she's like, nope, I'm going to go to my grandma's house. She sent me a picture once, and she hitchhikes down the freeway to try to get there. Cool. And there, and then the movie happens, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it
I want to see it.
Totally worth it.
Have you read Jane Yolen's Briar Rose?
That sounds vaguely familiar.
It's a retelling of Sleeping Beauty that interweaves it with the Holocaust.
Oh wow!
And the Holocaust, it's very powerful, and I think you would like, if you liked Freeway, it's sounding like you would probably like this as well.
Yeah, I will definitely have to look that up. One big warning, by the way, Freeway is rated R, very strongly rated R.
Okay, I will prepare myself accordingly.
That's more for the listeners.
I'm not that young.
No, it's more for the listeners because this is a PG-rated podcast.
Yeah,
I need to make sure that when I recommend something, it's not something to watch with your 13-year-old.
That's fair.
Maybe your 16-year-old if they're more mature and you can have a conversation.
You can discuss it. Yeah. Have a teachable moment. I thought of another adaptation that's important to me.
Mm.
Now, actually, Into the Woods.
Yes!
Right?
Yes!
Both the stage play and then also the film that came out, although I was mad at the ending because they cut the best song. Whatever.
I
that
still
doesn't even matter.
Haven't seen it. Which song did they cut?
The finale.
Yeah.
It just kind of ends. There should be one more like chorus swelling.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't happen. And I was mad. But whatever, I'm over it. I'm not over it. But I could be. But I really like that because, again, he's taking these very familiar characters and he's just twisting them. And it's actually plotted brilliantly.
Oh, yeah. Because they all intermingle into each other's stories.
The perfect way. Yeah. And the cyclical nature of it. Where, like, the baker now has his son and he's telling him the story.
Yeah.
And the whole children will listen thing. It's like, this works on so many levels. It works just as a story in itself.
Well,
it works as a commentary on fairy tales.
Before intermission, you have the fairy tales. And they all kind of play into each other. And then after intermission, it's after Happily Ever After. And that, to me, was just mind-blowing.
Because that's when things start disintegrating.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with fairy tales is we don't actually always know what happens next. And marriage sometimes can be a punishment. And it's funny, like when they do high school productions of it, often they'll just perform the first act.
Yeah, yeah, because it's a little harsh.
And frothy and funny, and it's all great. And then the second act, spoilers, but like there's death and people's lives being ruined and people having to fashion new families from the people around them, which is also a thing I really dig.
Like I love that part. Yeah.
Finding your own family in the film.
And there's sex on stage and, you know.
And it's cool because often the wolf is played by the same actor who plays one of the princes.
Yes.
Which is a really neat bit of casting.
I love that. And the narrator is the one that plays the baker's father. And that's also a bit of neat casting.
Like father, like son thing. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It's also partly, I think, how I got my job at Black Creek.
Oh, that's a story.
Yeah. So for whatever reason, when I was doing my interview, we got on the topic of musicals. And the like head boss at Black Creek is super into them. And she was like, oh, who do you like? It's like, I like Stephen Sondheim because he has clever lyrics. Like, oh, well, what's your favorite Sondheim play? And we'd just done a production of Into the Woods. So like, Into the Woods. She puts her pen down. She's like, that is my favorite musical. It's like, and I just got this job.
Excellent.
And I just got this job. And I did.
My mother and my aunt actually saw Into the Woods in previews.
The play?
Yes, the play.
Cool.
In previews. And my aunt has a very small bladder. So, of course, afterwards, you know, she had to wait for my aunt. And she's like, come on, let's go, let's go. And there's nobody in the theater anymore. And as they're leaving the theater, they're walking down the stairs. And there on a landing is the entire cast. And, like, Bernadette Peters on the floor sitting there. And they're like, this didn't really work out. And they're brainstorming and talking about what worked and what didn't work.
Yeah.
And my mother was completely starstruck, and I am starstruck by one degree of separation. By,
like, association. 2 degrees. And I love watching. Yeah, go ahead.
Into the Woods is where my Bernadette Peters crush just started. And the year that it came out, PBS aired it on PBS, and we taped it and watched that to death, to the point that our VHS had, like, the Gerbil lines on them.
Oh, I've seen, I think, clips from that recording on YouTube. Like, I think there's a couple scattered around the internet. My crush on Bernadette Peters, because I have one too.
Well, who doesn't?
I know, right? She's so good.
She's so amazing.
She's so good. But that started, I think, with Sunday in the Park with George.
Love that one.
I know.
I also and saw that on PBS.
Perfect in that too. I think I saw that recording too on DVD later.
Yes, I love her.
I've talked about this on other podcasts, but thinking of adaptations and crushes I have on actors, Penny Dreadful. Mm-hmm. Which, again, not really a fairy tale, and I haven't seen the last season. I understand that I should just forget it happened. It doesn't exist. This is what I've been told.
I've heard that.
Yeah, but again, taking all of these different characters and intermingling them in a way that makes sense. Like, what I love about Into the Woods and Penny Dreadful is that it never felt forced.
Right.
Like, to have the baker and Little Red and Jack, like, all showing up together. I was like, oh, no, of course.
Yeah.
That seems inevitable. Why, yes, continue. As opposed to, who else are you going to throw into the salad bowl? You know, it was, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So I have to ask you, for Into the Woods, who is your favorite, who's your favorite character from the show and that you love so much?
I really like the witch.
Yeah.
She's awesome. I also really like Cinderella a lot. She's a Cinderella that I think, like, can take care of herself more than other versions I've seen.
Absolutely.
And I like how she becomes kind of this mother figure, even though she herself is quite young. Like, that's a journey that I find very interesting, this kind of cusp between being a young girl and being an adult, like being a motherly figure. Mm-hmm. And I love how they incorporate something from, again, an older version of Cinderella, which is her mother's spirit in the tree.
Yes, the tree.
That's so cool. Well, I was really happy to see it.
I also really like the fact that she sits there and ponders, does she want the prince to catch her?
Yeah.
And
she has a whole song about it.
Yeah, right? And she's got 3 nights to decide, does she want him to catch her? And she's scared to make the decision.
Yeah.
And that's really fascinating for me.
Really, it worked quite well as a psychological study, like the entire play.
Yeah. And I love with the witch how, you know, in the beginning, her quest is to be beautiful because she lost her beauty because she was cursed for losing her beans. And then she gets her beauty back and she's like, oh, wait, where'd my power go? Oh, wait, I don't like beauty that much.
Yes, I want power.
Yes.
Who are your favorite characters?
Well, definitely the witch.
Yeah.
And I think I was always a big fan of the baker's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that also goes back to the whole, like, I didn't ever want to get married because I totally saw her as a cautionary tale. But as I got older, I definitely, you know, Cinderella worked in there, but all of the female characters were great. You know, yeah. You had Granny was amazing. She's just insane and amazing. Jack's giantess. Mother, the giantess, is amazing. Yeah. Jack's mother, I just, there's so much that you can learn from her. And I can't tell you how many times I'll say, the slotted spoon don't know much soup. but so all of the female characters are just, they're so strong. They're so complex.
And well developed. Again, it's like a study of psychology. Little Red.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like, she's got issues, but she's really awesome.
Exactly.
I think that actually summarizes the play. They have issues. But they're really awesome.
Yes.
If I were to ever play it again, though, because I got stuck being an evil stepsister when I did it in high school. Part of me was like, if we could bring Jack's songs up to my register, I would make a really good Jack.
There you go. You could definitely gender bend Jack.
Totally.
Or just have you play him. I mean, he's supposed to be a boy, so it doesn't matter
exactly.
The register.
Well, that's more what I was thinking. I rock trouser roles.
My niece did for Cabaret. I think she did Cinderella's song. And the one we were talking about. And her director, who never wanted to give her anything but chorus, gave her the best compliment because he said, you know, there's a reason we don't do Into the Woods. Because the songs are too hard and nobody can sing them. And that's one of those songs that nobody can sing. But you did it amazingly.
Oh, that's so good.
And she's like, okay, so let's do Into the Woods. And I got my part.
How was that met?
No, they didn't do it.
That's sad.
It's terrible. But it's... And you know, because my niece, she has this like operatic voice, so she can hit that high note, you know?
Yeah.
And... The all of the songs are just amazing there.
And now I have them all stuck in my head.
Including Hello Little Girl. I do not sing very well. But when my sister and I were younger, she'd do Red and I'd do the Wolf.
Nice.
We got the bad innuendo. We just made sure we weren't standing too close to each other when doing
bad
it.
Bad touch. I do love in the film version, Agony. They do it so well.
I really need to see the film version. I've been scared to see it.
It's good.
Okay.
I got mad at the very end, but overall it's very good.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. It's like Les Mis, watching the movie version. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel. But I think on the whole, they did a pretty good job.
Pretty good. That one you really have to see on stage. But if you can't, it is an acceptable substitute.
Absolutely. Well, it's a different thing. That's for sure.
It has to be. Yeah. It's better than, say, the film adaptation of Phantom.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible. That's absolutely horrible. And
I pretend it doesn't exist.
I was doing very good at that until you reminded me.
I'm sorry.
There's so many film adaptations.
I do it only to bolster Les Mis.
There are so many film adaptations of Broadway plays that are just so terrible that it makes me very anxious when they adapt something. And there's very few shining examples.
I kind of want them to adapt Hamilton so I can see it, but I'm nervous of it for precisely that reason.
I want PBS to do a recording of it.
I'm sure. Didn't they already record it?
I don't know. Right, I haven't seen it.
I think they made a recording just before Lin-Manuel Miranda left.
Okay, well, then that should be good.
They wanted a record of the original cast, which I think is smart.
Yes.
I don't know what they did with it.
Well, hopefully they'll hang on to it, and one day they'll sell it.
One day we'll see it, and then that will be another modern fairy tale.
There you go.
In a funny way.
Absolutely. So This has been Fairy Tales Then and Now. Yeah. Tell us your favorite fairy tales. You can do that by going to the website, nimlas.org, or you can go to the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/nuttybites. Or you can send in emails. You'll get all the details at the closing of this show. But please let us know what your favorite fairy tales. And thank you so much, Katie, for joining us. I'm very excited to hear your stories. I've already listened to the first episode.
Yay!
It's very good. And you can go to ktbrisky.com/6stories. Is that right?
Six stories told at night.
Six stories told at night. Yes, like, with little just dashes. Just go to
ktbrisky.com. You'll see it. It's hard to miss.
It's right at the top. You can find it. So, KT, do you want to give us more links to where people can find you?
ktbrisky.com is the best one. So that's ktbrysky.com. I'm on Twitter as @KTBrisky, and you can find me on Facebook if you just search KT Brisky author. I'm very consistent with how I'm found on the internet.
It's pretty great that way.
I just can't keep track of too many things.
It's really for my
own sanity.
Hey, at least your KT Brisky is easier to spell than Nukchas, so you're good.
There is that. Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
I'm so glad to have you on. I've been very excited about this grant and happy. I just happened to read, you know, you had posted, Does anybody want me on a podcast or guest post? I was like, hey, I'll get you on a podcast. So I'm interrupting Doug Days of Podcasting to do this episode.
Me?
Yes, just for you.
Well, thank you. No, it's been really nice. Like we were saying earlier, I just get to go around talking to all the people I missed at Balticon this year.
Yes.
So for me, it's just like, this is awesome.
Yay. Well, thank you so much. And you are welcome back anytime.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Once upon a time, there was a girl who lived in a little village far away. I've got this friend, Joelle, right? Sam. I know how to get there. It just takes the right story, that's all. Once upon a time, I'm looking for my friend. Getting to Elfland isn't the same as getting into Elfland. You must tell me a story. One which I have never heard before. Elfland. Fairy. Avalon. Tir na n'og. When you read enough fairy tales, you learn how things work. When you are ready. Six stories told at night. Part audio drama, part storytelling, all Canadian fairy tales. Find out more at ktbrisky.com. That's ktbrysky.com.
Nutty Bites is produced at Nimlas Studios. You can find us on the web at nimlasstudios.org. This work is created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported International License. What that means is you can share it, you can send it to your friends, you just can't make any money off of it, you can't change it, and you have to link back to me, my site, and everything. You can comment and send feedback by going to nimlas.org/nuttybites. You can go to facebook.com/group/nuttybites. You can call the comment line by going to 347-NUTTY42, or you can find me on Twitter, you can search on Google+, you can search the web, you can find me everywhere.